Are you ready? Are you ready to take massive action towards building a life and lifestyle that rewards you with a fit body, endless supplies of mental and physical energy, and total freedom from guilt around food and exercise? This is Cut the Fat Podcast. Dr. Ray Hines joined here with Blythe Ahlberg. Hey, Blythe.
Hello, everybody. I hope everyone is having a fantastic day. I know I am.
I am as well. And we're happy to be with you.
We are. We're happy to be bringing you a new podcast. We have a great topic that you came up with this time. And I'm actually really, really pumped. This is like the ultimate podcast in my eyes.
It's the 10 commandments of permanent weight loss.
If I could
put a reverb on it, I would, but I'm not going to try.
That's as good as it gets for now.
Okay. So the bottom line is that nothing sucks more than following a weight loss program to the letter and being rewarded with no weight loss or, worse yet, a weight gain.
Right.
I guess, you know, something could be worse than that, and that is putting a ton of effort in, actually losing some weight, and then gaining it all back. So today's episode is the 10 commandments for those people who want permanent weight loss.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Long and lasting weight loss.
Fair warning, though. Okay. Fair warning. Some of this stuff will be repetitive. Right, Blythe?
Sure. There are things we've talked about before, but I think the way we're putting everything into the Ten Commandments this time will really help people. I think it's going to ring a different bell. So if you've heard us say it before, really pay attention this time. And you know, listen in how we're saying it to you, because these things are really important. And a lot of these things might sound repetitive and go in one ear and out the other, but they're the Ten Commandments. And that's why we have labeled them such, because they are so important.
Right. And, you know, if you're a menopausal, postmenopausal woman having difficulty losing weight, even more important to listen to this one, especially to number 9. Commandment number 9, which we're going to get to. So that's anybody who's over the age of 40, I think, male or female, needs to listen to commandment number 9, because that's one we don't really talk a lot about, but we're going to get into it today.
Right. We're going to kind of get down to the nitty gritty of that one. And I really like that. I love the fact that you brought that up. So where shall we start?
Thou shalt start with commandment number 1. Go ahead.
Thou shalt focus on changing behavior and not only losing weight. So most of us, I know for me, I can say this for myself, most people come to us wanting to lose weight. That's the big picture. But what they typically focus on is the number on the scale or the inch measurements or, you know, whatever. They want to lose body fat. They want to lose some of the extra pounds they've put on over the last years. And what you and I always talk about is a healthy body will, or healthy behaviors will result in a healthy body. So what we try to get people focusing on is the behavior and not the outcome of doing those behaviors consistently, right?
Absolutely. And let me explain why this is so vital. And this is the number one commandment, the first commandment we get into. And again, I know, repetitive, we've talked about this before. A healthy weight chases a healthy body. Right. When you have healthy behaviors, you end up with a healthy body, and that healthy body is what delivers to you the healthy weight. It's not
the permanent weight loss.
Right. It's like the end all be all is the weight. That's what we're after. But the truth is, what we're after is a healthy metabolism, a healthy body that ultimately delivers to us the weight that we're after, or more importantly, the level of health, fitness, and body composition.
Right.
So, you know, think of it this way. There was an example of that I like to give of a patient. I'll call her Shelly, her real name, but she was a pre-diabetic patient who had a lot of weight to lose. So she came to me, and part of what she was coming to discuss was the pre-diabetes, but really deep down what she wanted was the weight loss, which was nearly impossible for her. So we've talked about the 30-30 plan in the past, which is what, Blythe?
Oh, doing walking for 30 minutes for 30 days without skipping any days between.
Right. If you
30
skip a
days
day,
straight.
what happens?
You have to start right
Right?
over
So
again.
if you're on the 28th day and you miss that day, guess what? You're starting over at day one.
Right.
And so that's what I had suggested she do. Now, we talked about some other things. We got her on a few supplements because we do work, you know, I do a lot of supplement work in my practice here. And I made some small changes to her diet, but it wasn't a lot. The big thing I told her was I want you to walk 30 minutes every day for 30 straight days. And we set an appointment for her to come back. So 30 days later, she comes back. And the first thing she says to me is, I haven't lost a single pound. To which I
I've been in
replied,
that position before.
oh yeah, oh yeah. And the truth is, I didn't think it was necessarily going to result in significant weight loss for her. I certainly expected her to lose something, but you know, she didn't lose a single pound. So I said, okay, did you complete your 30 days of 30 minutes of walking? She said, I missed a day or two, but I walked almost all 30 days. And I said, okay, how do you feel? And she said, actually, I'm feeling better. I actually feel like I have more energy. To be truthful, I haven't walked this much in years, which I knew from her intake that she was very, very sedentary. So that was great. I said, so we made a few more changes to her lifestyle, made a few more changes to her diet as well, but mild things, nothing too, you know, big. And I said, go and do the 30-30 plan again. So 30 days later, she calls me. Rather than coming in, she calls and she says, and the first thing she says is, I did it. Today is my last day of the 30-30 plan, and I have walked every single day. And I said, that's great. How do you feel? She said, I feel amazing. I have been eating better, taking my supplements every day. And I said, and the weight? And she says, I've only lost a pound. I think it was a pound, pound and a half, something like that.
I think a lot of people can relate to this part right here. I want everyone to really listen in.
Right. So when we were talking about how do you feel, she was. Her energy was really up in the sky. I feel amazing. And you could hear it in her voice. But when we asked about the weight, when I asked about the weight, it came down to this shift towards disappointment and melancholy. And she said, well, I only lost a pound.
As if that was a loss. I
Right.
mean, and I don't mean like, I don't mean
Yeah.
an actual loss. I mean, as if that wasn't a good thing compared to all the other great things she was feeling.
Exactly. And this is the lesson of commandment number one. You can take 100 people, put them on exactly the same weight loss program, and at the end of 3 months, some people will have lost 30 pounds, some will have lost 5 pounds, some will have remained the same weight, and yet other poor, unlucky schmoes would have gained a pound or two. It's because weight loss is an ugly science. There's that repetition again. Weight loss is an ugly science. It's not linear, right? Everybody can do exactly the same thing and lose totally different amounts of weight, if any at all.
You know, one of the things I ask my clients to do, and whoever has worked with me in the past that's listening to this podcast can attest to this, I ask people to give me a history rundown. And if they are somebody who has yo-yo dieted several times, where they've gone up, gone down, had kids, come back down, had more kids, you know, gained more weight, never lost it. It's a little easier when people kind of look at their history. They have a little bit of reflection on their life in the past, and they might start to recognize that, well, I've gone up, down. My body's trying to find some equilibrium here, you know? And it's going to take a little while. And like you said, it's different for everyone. But I think getting people to reflect on their past a little bit and look at all the yo-yoing and the ups and downs, it's not a bad thing to stay where you're at right now, even if it's not the weight you want to be at. But it will change. You can see by what's happened in the past. It gets a little tougher each time. And I find that, you know, especially women, menopausal or as hormones are changing, things like that, it does get a little more difficult and it's frustrating and trying, but stay the course and it will happen.
It will happen. If you stack enough healthy behaviors on top of each other, it can't not happen.
It can't not happen. Yes, thank you for saying it that way. That's what I tell people all the time. It can't not happen. If you're making all of these positive changes, it will work.
Maybe not tomorrow, maybe not next
Right?
week, maybe not even a month from now, but it will happen. The scale crumbles beneath the weight of healthy behaviors stacked on top of each other. Now, if we set a goal of losing 2 pounds a week, okay, and we make some pretty drastic lifestyle changes to achieve that 2 pounds a week, because weight loss is an ugly science, you may win or you may not. No matter your effort and consistency, sometimes the body just doesn't reward you, right?
Right. Well, that's kind of out of your control.
It is out of your control.
Yeah.
And what specifically is out of your control?
Well, how many pounds, if any? You know, there are a lot of shifts that take place, and whether or not the scale changes is going to be there's just too many factors.
There
are too many factors. I can't even name one. It could be that you had a tablespoon of soy sauce at dinner. You know what I mean? It could be a million things. And that's just not the type of goal we want to be setting to keep our feelings positive towards this, to keep that motivation and momentum going.
Right. And so that's kind of the point here, is when you focus on weight, your emotions are going to go all over the place, and eventually you will give up.
So what happened with Shelley then?
So Shelley, you know, continued to focus on the 30 days of walking. She finished that, obviously, and she continued to focus on these healthy lifestyles. After, you know, it kind of was like a light bulb moment for her when she realized that, you know, of course, if I live a healthy life, if I build a bunch of healthy behaviors, of course the weight will respond and my energy levels will improve. And when you focus on changing behaviors, when I told her, drink a liter of water a day, every day she had the opportunity to win, right? She could choose to win. If I said lose a pound or lose half a pound today, she may or may not win that, no matter how much effort she puts in. But if I say drink a liter of water, she, if she decides to, can win every single day. And that's kind of that stacking process that happens that isn't just about stacking the behaviors. It's stacking victories, one right after the other, that really promotes that inertia, that momentum that gets you going towards the goal that you want. And ultimately, months and months later, it was a very slow process for her, but she had lost almost 20 pounds. She was no longer considered pre-diabetic. And the first time in a long time, she felt hopeful. She even said, I don't even worry about the weight anymore. Even though she wasn't at her goal weight, she wasn't where she wanted to be, she knew that if she focused on the things that she could do on a daily basis, eventually she would get there. And it's not to say she didn't have her frustrations. There were days where the weight wouldn't move at all. But if you stick with it, if you stay with it, and you focus on just living a healthier life, the magic happens there. It doesn't happen on the scale.
Right. Yeah. No, I love that. I think that's a really important lesson, especially for a lot of our listeners. It's something that you've heard before, but I think it's important to repeat. And I think most of us start to slide because after the, let's say, 28 days she did the first time you recommended the 30-30 to her, and then she went back and did the actual 30 days, things had started to change. Now, if she hadn't felt better and if she hadn't started focusing on not so much the weight, but how great she was feeling, when people don't recognize that or you don't have somebody point that out to you, we start to slide. And then what happens is the next month, you're not going to do 30 days. Maybe you'll do 14 days. Maybe you'll do 17 days. And then the consistency tapers off. And that's where we end up losing the battle and losing the motivation and kind of tripping over ourselves, I think, is people say, well, yeah, I'm consistent. Well, people tell me they're consistent with their food logs all the time. And then I go in, oh, yeah, well, this day I went out to lunch and this day I had snacks. Oh, I forgot to put – right. So the consistency is really, really – I'm hammering it down into the ground, I know, but that's really where it's at.
Right. And, you know, what I ask people is, would you rather lose 10 pounds over a six-month period and keep that weight off forever? Or would you rather lose 30 pounds in 1 month and gain it all back the next?
Right.
the next month, right. So that's the question that we're really after. And this is, you know, I don't know. Have you run into people, because I certainly have, who no matter what I tell them, no matter how I explain it, they don't encapsulate this. They don't take it in.
Right. You know why? Do you know what I think? It's not that they don't accept it. In my observation. It's not that they don't accept it. It's that it sounds too darn simple that it won't work. And I'm not talking about the healthy habits. I'm talking about just walking and being consistent for 30 days. I think the 30-30 sounds so easy, you know, and then people start, and I can tell you, a friend of mine is a chef and walks almost 5 miles a day, but is trying to lean up a little bit because, you know, chefs like to taste their own food. And I've been telling him, you know what, go for a little walk after work every day. And he's like, yeah, but I walk 5 miles every day. So it's not that they're resistant to hearing it. I think it's that they feel like they're already being consistent in doing these types of things and that that should be good enough and that should work instead of just taking the advice and giving it an honest effort.
Right. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. One of the key determinants of who will and will not be successful with achieving their weight loss goals is the person's ability to tolerate, and I choose that word carefully, to tolerate change in behavior without an outward result on the scale. The more you are able to make shifts and changes in your lifestyle and not expect the scale to change, the more successful you will be with changing the scale ultimately.
Agreed.
All right.
Yeah. Shall we move on to number two?
How about that? I mean, what was that, like 15 minutes on commandment number one? A lot of the other ones are going to be a lot shorter. This was the longest one out of the bunch because it does require a lot more convincing for people to let go of focusing so much on what the scale tells them and to focus more on the behavior at hand.
And what's 30 days of walking? It's only going to make you healthier. Might as well try it.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Okay. Thou shalt optimize insulin levels. So how can we do that? Well, walking is one. Fasting is another way to keep those blood sugar levels down because high insulin levels are horrible for trying to access and lose body fat.
Right. There are a lot of things that weight loss experts can't agree on, but I think practically every weight loss expert on earth would agree that high insulin levels are bad for your fat loss efforts. Now, it may not be universally accepted that insulin is the end-all, be-all of losing weight, but I can tell you that practically everybody who knows anything about weight loss will acknowledge the fact that having high insulin levels is not a good thing for anybody's health and certainly not good for your body fat.
Right.
So you got to optimize your insulin levels, and we choose that word carefully. We're not talking about just lowering insulin levels to as low as humanly possible. That's really not what it's about, because insulin is not a bad guy, right?
Right. We need insulin, right?
Right. Absolutely. Just like water, insulin's only bad when you're drowning in it.
Right.
And so when you have high insulin levels, it's terrible for your fat loss. So like you said, there are a few things, and we're not going to get into a whole dissertation on insulin because that's 5 or 10 different podcast episodes, some of which we've already done already.
Mm-hmm. So first, I said walking. So going for a walk is the fastest path to bringing your insulin receptors to the surface of the muscle. And I think you said research suggests that any exercise with the legs instantly improves the ability to lower your blood sugar and improve insulin levels versus doing all upper body exercises, right?
Right. The muscles of the lower extremities seem to really play the most impact on your insulin sensitivity. So anything that works the lower extremities, the legs, the calves, those types of muscles, those big, huge muscles that we have on our body, are the ones that are going to impact our insulin sensitivity the most. Great. What's next?
Okay. The next one is fasting. And most people would probably agree that it sucks, but it actually works really well. And I think that you can lower your insulin levels about 25% by simply fasting. So having dinner as your last meal of the day and waiting about 3 hours is what we usually say before bedtime, 2 to 3 hours. And maybe taking a walk between, you know, lunch and dinner or even after dinner would be fine.
Well, with the fasting protocol, there's this protocol that I like that's a very, very simple one to implement. And it's exercise while fasted. So as you said, after dinner, you just simply don't eat. You know, a lot of people, unfortunately, they do eat after dinner. They might snack on chips while they're watching TV or doing other things. That unfortunately robs you of very significant fat loss time, right? Because when insulin levels normalize, when they drop, that's when you have your fat cells releasing the fat into the system to be burned away. So when is a good time that you're fasting? It's when you're sleeping, because you're not uncomfortable, right? If you're sleeping and you're fasted, you don't know you're fasted. You're just asleep. Right. So if we eat before we sleep, we waste a good 3, 4, 5 hours of that fasted time where we could be burning fat. And so when you wake up in the morning, if you go for a walk at that point and then you skip breakfast and then you just eat lunch, that is a protocol that seems to work pretty well. And the research suggests that it can lower your fasting insulin levels by about 25%, which is terrific. That can't not impact your weight loss efforts.
Right. And I have several clients who ask me about fasted workouts. And, you know, a lot of people like to get up first thing in the morning, nice and early, and go get their workout in. And there's no problem going and doing that. In fact, it may be beneficial for you to do that 2 or 3 times a week or every other day or however, mm-hmm. and see how long that works for you. And I am the type of person who actually does that on the regular every other day, probably 4 days a week. I'll go early in the morning and get in a fasted workout. And yeah, for me, that works.
It's great. And some people find that that is one of the best ways to get rid of the belly fat as well. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't work for everybody. Some people are resistant. Some people's bodies are resistant to that. And I think the big factor that ultimately determines whether or not fasting is going to work as a tool for you is whether or not you starve yourself for the rest of the hours of the day. If you're in a starved, if you're dieting, if you're eating very, very sparsely throughout the day, and then on top of that, you throw a fast, well, that fast then becomes a larger stressor. Right. You're stressing the metabolism even further. But if you're well fed, meaning you're eating real foods, good quantities of those foods, mm-hmm. and the body, you know, during the rest of the hours of the day when you're not fasting, and the body gets the idea that food is not scarce, then fasting becomes a very helpful tool. And there are a lot of benefits that go well above just losing weight with fasting. It can be quite helpful for, again, preventing things like diabetes. It can be helpful for improving blood cholesterol levels. And it's one of the best ways to prolong your life, to actually stimulate the genes that make you live longer. So there's a lot of advantages outside of that. A discussion for another time.
Okay. And finally, there's a third one. Focus on carb quantity before you focus on the quality.
Right. So if a lot of people want to go from white rice to brown rice or from white bread to wheat bread. Do you get that a lot?
Yes, all the time. And yeah, you know, it's really, especially clients who just start working with me, it's, yeah, the quality of that is really, you don't need to make those big changes just yet. I would focus on the quantity that you're getting, and let's try to make it the, get your macros dialed in right before we worry about where exactly they're coming from, if they're little lateral shifts like you're talking about.
Right. It's not that brown, you know, brown bread, like wheat bread and things like that, isn't better than white bread. It's just that it's not, you know, let's say it's 10 to 20% better. Let's say if it's, yeah. But if you're still eating huge quantities of those carbs, then it's really not going to make a dent in your results and your insulin sensitivity.
Exactly. Very well put.
Cool. And I'll point out just one final note that a recent study did find that eating pasta, I want to mention this because you're going to see headlines that eating pasta, not bad for weight loss. When you look at the data, it's true that the researchers did find that eating pasta did not cause weight gain in the subjects who did it. But, and in fact, they did lose weight during the course of the study, which doesn't surprise me. But it was 1/2 cup of pasta 3 times a week.
Okay.
Not, you know, the standard
Not
restaurant.
3 cups of pasta.
Yeah, which
six
is a,
times a week.
Three, exactly. That's like a restaurant portion of pasta. It's like 3 cups of pasta, not 1/2 cup. So, right. Yeah, I think it's, you know, that's why I say you and I are not low carbers in a sense that we're Atkins style or, you know, no carb kind of people. We think that carbs do play a role in a healthy weight loss program. You just got to watch the quantity first before you focus so much on that quality. And sometimes if you focus on the quality, like eating vegetables, for example, and real fruits and things like that, then the quantity takes care of itself. But if you're talking about going from white bread to wheat bread or white rice to brown rice, things like that, then yeah, it's not going to be terribly useful for you if you're eating huge quantities of those things.
Got it. Commandment number 3, thou shalt correct hormonal imbalances. So hormones are how our cells communicate. And when they get out of whack, your metabolism goes crazy because the cells are not receiving the proper instructions. And what I like to tell my clients is food is data for your body. And what you eat is, well, how your hormones react is a direct result of what you're eating. Would you agree with that when I say food is data?
Now, you know, certainly age can play a role with hormones. You know, as we get older, all of our, you know, every one of our hormone, every one of us will suffer a lower quantity of certain hormones like estrogen in women and progesterone, mm-hmm. testosterone in men, and sometimes in women as well. But there certainly are lifestyle things that can positively and negatively impact those hormones.
So the bottom line is when your hormones are optimal and your metabolism is running like that well-oiled race car, mm-hmm. your hormone signals go totally haywire and you gain weight, lots of weight. And I know for a lot of women, this happens during menopause. That's one of the big hormonal shifts that almost everyone who's been there can resonate with.
Right.
And I don't get that many men who experience big hormonal changes. What do you think the percentage is for men versus women who are experiencing these types of things as far as your practice goes?
Well, I think men are more resistant to weight gain anyway because they generally have more muscle mass, faster
True.
Running metabolisms, and the receptors on their fat cells are different than women. So I think I don't know what the percentage would be, but I'd say that most men eventually run into problems, just like most women eventually run into problems. I think that in women, when it pertains to weight and weight gain, I think it's more obvious to them, right?
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, you know, we don't want to get into a full dissertation on various hormones, because obviously there are a lot of hormones and, you know, you could fill volumes of books on any
right.
one of them. The point that we just wanted to draw attention to is that if you are a menopausal woman or a perimenopausal woman, you might want to seek out the help of a physician who's well-schooled in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy if everything else fails. So let's say you do all the other commandments here and everything else we talk about in the podcast and the weight won't budge. Well, we want to look at the hormones because something may be out of whack. The biggest hormonal imbalances are going to be that ultimately cause weight gain are going to be polycystic ovary syndrome and hypothyroid. So those are the two obvious ones. Both of those are lifestyle focused, can be lifestyle related. Sometimes they are not. Sometimes they're just bad genetics. But they can be impacted by lifestyle. So, so if you have those issues, get help because it is almost impossible to lose weight if you have untreated polycystic ovary syndrome or hypothyroid.
Okay.
If you're just perimenopausal and menopausal, you can still find a holistic doctor who specializes in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and get a workup. You may find that once you get things rebalanced into more youthful levels, that your metabolism just... it's night and day in some women when they get those imbalances corrected. So we just wanted to draw your attention to the fact that sometimes there are hormonal things that can be positively impacted by lifestyle, and if not, may be able to be corrected through the careful fine-tuning of a holistic physician or a physician who's well-schooled in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy.
Cool. Good suggestion.
All right.
Good recommendation. Commandment number 4. This is my favorite one. Thou shalt sleep. I'm the type of person who needs an 8-hour night of rest. How about you?
Me too. I can get away with about 7.5, but if I get 7 to 7.5 hours, I'm feeling great. If I get less than that, it my day suffers. You know, a lot of things suffer with me. But 7.5 seems to be the cutoff point where most people benefit. Some people need less and do just fine with less. But the point is you should be waking up feeling restored and energetic.
Right. And, you know, sleep, telling people that they need to get adequate sleep isn't like a sexy kind of fun magazine cover, you know, sleep 8 hours for a sexy slimmer you. Hey, maybe that would be. Someone might pick that up. But really, it is vital for fat loss to be able to allow your body to rest and recuperate. And 7.5 to 8 hours, I think is, I know that's what you just said, but I think that that's what we recommended in a previous podcast. And it's one of our core guiding principles of Cut the Fat Podcast. There are non-caloric causes of fat storage. And one of those is not getting adequate sleep.
Right. You know, sleeping enough doesn't, you know, burn calories per se. Certainly, you burn some calories while you sleep, but you burn more calories while awake, right? So it's not the calories that matter in this situation. It's how your body's metabolism changes in response to that, to the experience of either getting sufficient sleep or not getting sufficient sleep.
Lack of, yeah.
You could do everything else right and and just, you know, work off of 4 hours of sleep and not burn a single pound or ounce of fat. I have met people whose only problem is they can't sleep. And once we get that sleep improved, their metabolism improves as well.
Yeah. And quite often I find, because I've come across the same thing with several clients, and they're usually people who work night shifts like nurses. And I'll tell you that probably 30% of the people that I've worked with are nurses, and their biggest difficulties are getting adequate sleep because they're on rotating shifts or they work night hours, and getting in enough water, because being able to run off and go to the bathroom is, you know,
it's difficult.
Pressing.
In those
it's pressing.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Absolutely. So sometimes you just have to get in a little more sleep to flip that metabolic switch to really get you burning again. And it could be something as simple as sleep.
Right. And I will make one final point before we go on to the next one. That is, sleep apnea is another issue. That is a death sentence for your metabolism. In fact, it could be a death sentence for your overall life as
just
well.
Just life, yeah.
I have met people whose entire health has been just destroyed by the fact that they've had untreated sleep apnea for many years. And it certainly is a cause of premature heart disease in a lot of people. But speaking specifically to metabolism, I have met people who just can't, you know, once they get their sleep apnea corrected or they start treating it magically out of the blue without even expecting it, they start to lose weight. So if you have sleep apnea, definitely have that treated in some way. If you can't do a CPAP machine, if you've tried and you failed, there are other options out there that you can pursue. Find a specialist, somebody who can help you with that.
Cool. I imagine it would be like a whole new life once you get a grasp on that.
Go ahead. Okay, next.
Number five, thou shalt walk.
We're not going to spend a lot of time on this one because we've already talked about it a lot.
You know, yeah. You know, right now, especially in the world, in the society that we live in right now, I find that a lot of people are focusing on high intensity interval training, which is fantastic, but that is not supposed to replace walking.
Right. I call it the beach body workout culture, right?
It
used to be, it was all about steady state cardio. And then, you know, I would
jogging 3 or 4 miles.
Right. And you know, high intensity interval training came into the picture. And then the beach body workouts came out. And they really, I really think that they've had they've caused a big shift in how people work out. And I think it's for the better. I do. I think it's for the better. I think, you know, these types of short, intense bouts of physical activity do play a role in helping us to burn fat and lose weight because of the hormone signals that are being sent. And we talk about that in another one of the core guiding principles, which is eat and exercise to manage your hormones, not to manage your calories. And high-intensity interval training sends a hormonal signal, bam, to the metabolism that says burn calories and does it in such a way that doesn't cause us to go seeking food elsewhere. So that's great, but walking serves a different purpose, doesn't it?
Yes. Walking is one of those exercises that you can do that doesn't trigger your compensatory engine.
Right.
So, which is when you, let's just say for me, for example, if I went for a 5 mile jog, which would be extremely difficult for me, I just don't have the patience to go like long distances and jog or bike or anything like that. I don't have the patience for it, but I can go for a long walk. But it's the jogging and whatnot. I'm getting a little older these days too. But anyway, I find myself eating more food to make up for the calories that I burned during that long bout of exercise. And I find that a lot of people, you know, people who go out and they jog every single day, that's just what they do. They end up compensating that. They're refueling that. And then they end up not losing any body fat or weight, or even accessing their body fat for that matter, while they're doing that exercise.
Right. So you know, that type of exercise causes the body to become more efficient at burning calories. So they burn less calories when they're sitting on a couch because they're, you know, and we're going to talk about this when we get to commandment number 9, because of the impact that long, steady state aerobic exercise has on how our muscles are produced. It causes more type 1 muscle fiber, which is a very efficient muscle fiber. And we're going to talk about that here in just a minute. But this compensatory engine is a big problem for people. It is perhaps the reason why steady state exercise has failed in practically every study to date to promote any more weight loss than just simply eating a lower calorie diet.
Or can I tag one thing onto the end of that?
Yeah.
or why a lot of my clients find that that used to work in their 20s. The first time they decided to start running, or they ran track, or they, you know, played soccer or something like that, they would go do this and it worked. It helped them slim down. But that's because that was the first time you tried it, and you were probably, well, you were a lot younger, and you were probably not sitting on a couch feeding your face in the evenings. And if you were, you also had a much younger metabolism.
Right.
So those things might work, but they won't work forever.
And they will work less and less, and actually become more and more problematic as we get older, especially as we get as women move into the perimenopausal years, and men move into the andropausal years. It becomes less and less beneficial,
and it becomes extremely frustrating to people who are like, "This used to work for me. I don't understand. I used to run 5 miles. Now I'm running 8 miles, and I don't know why this isn't working."
Right, and you know, I've tested metabolisms of people who are marathoners, and their metabolisms suck. So it's because they're just burning away their muscle mass, and that becomes more of an issue as they get older. So high-intensity interval training is like a punch to the face of your metabolism, and your metabolism responds by wanting to get stronger and burn hotter. The problem is, if you burn a hot metabolism too much, you burn it out. Walking is restorative. So high-intensity interval training, high-intensity resistance training, you know, working out really aggressively is great because it sends signals to the body to burn the metabolism stronger. But to prevent the burnout, if you supplement that with walking, walking is restorative. Walking lowers cortisol levels, which is fantastic, and it restores the metabolism to a healthy state. It also is one of the best ways to improve insulin sensitivity, so it's wonderful. And it gets lost in all of the discussion on high-intensity interval training.
Yeah, and walking will burn calories still, but without activating that compensatory engine and make you feel like you need to eat more.
That's big. That is big, because that is one of the biggest factors that I think people run into, is that compensatory eating and the compensatory slothfulness that occurs as well, meaning that when you jog a lot, when you're watching TV, you'll move less. You'll be inclined to get up and do stuff less out in the active world. It's just a natural thing that happens beneath the surface. You don't even realize you're doing it. You don't realize you're eating a few more chips than you normally would. You don't realize you're getting a little bit more ketchup or barbecue sauce into your food, or sauces and things like that. And it all adds up until you've replenished what you've lost. So that's just you know, a quick discussion more on the impact of the compensatory engine. But walking is just one of those things you cannot ignore. Do not ignore.
No matter what your age. So those of you who are 25 years old listening to this saying, I don't want to go for a walk, you will benefit from walking.
And
we're
not talking
just for
about
old people.
Right. And we're not just talking about you know, putting on the short shorts and going for a speed walk. We're talking about just leisurely walking out in nature. So wonderful stuff. Just keep it incorporated into your lifestyle. If you're spending 2 hours in front of a TV every night, why don't you just replace some of that with some walking? Your life will be better for it. Not just your metabolism, but your life, because you'll work through problems that are going on in your life and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Walking's great. Commandment number 6, thou shalt eat. Not too much, though. Mostly plants, some protein, and some fat, healthy fats. So we all know, at least I hope by this stage, we all know that you cannot and very likely will not starve your fat away. Starving yourself only leads to other issues, and the fat doesn't dwindle off and melt off and just disappear. That's not how you're going to achieve permanent weight loss. One of the biggest causes of weight loss failure is hunger. So, you know, going without eating is only going to work for a very short period of time. We have to eat. Your body needs calories. Your body needs calories to burn fat.
And just because you're losing weight by starving yourself does not mean you're losing fat.
Right. Exactly right. And that's kind of goes into what you were talking about, the marathon runners who are dipping into their muscle stores versus dipping into their fat stores, because their metabolism is not as speedy as it could be if they were to do a different type of exercise. I'm not picking on marathoners by any means, but you've got scientific proof there.
Right. Thou shalt eat, not too much, mostly plants, some protein, some fat. So if you live by that rule, that is one of the best rules. I can't remember what author wrote that. They didn't write that whole thing. I added the protein and the fat to the mix, but their statement was eat not too much, mostly plants, and if you achieve that, then you'll live a healthy, long, energetic life. And I honestly believe that. So get some protein in there. Make sure you're getting sufficient protein. If you're really super active, add more protein into the mix. Don't forget the healthy fats like avocados, nuts, extra virgin olive oil, extra virgin coconut oil, and things like that in your mix, and it'll go a long way. The whole point of this commandment was just to get people out of this mindset that dieting is the way to go for weight loss.
Right.
Eating right. Real food is the way to go for weight loss.
Right, exactly. And eating whole prime foods that haven't been processed, things that I think you and I have said this before, things that come in Mother Nature's packaging, an orange versus a Dixie cup of orange juice, grilled chicken versus chicken nuggets. You know, start thinking like this, sweet potatoes rather than mashed potatoes and gravy. Right. You're the mashed potato guy, aren't you?
I do like me some mashed potatoes, I will admit.
It's funny. It's just not my thing, but I know that a lot of people love mashed potatoes. For me, it could be Oreos, so we won't go there. So anyway, eat whole prime foods most of the time.
Right.
Almost all of the time.
But
commandment number seven.
Commandment
yes,
number seven.
But eat. Commandment number seven, thou shalt relax. There are two ways to make 100 out of 100 people gain weight. And the first is to inject them with large quantities of insulin, which we already talked about in commandment number two. And the second way is to inject them with cortisol or a drug that mimics cortisol like prednisone, right?
Right. And so cortisol is a stress hormone. So when your body is exposed to cortisol specifically for extended periods of time, like when you're under chronic stress that just won't let up, the cortisol does two things. It erodes the muscle away. It burns the muscle away because it's a catabolic steroid rather than an anabolic steroid. Anabolic steroid like testosterone builds muscle. Catabolic steroids like cortisol erode muscle. And they erode your joints over time as well. So it really is the length of time. Having short bouts of stress actually are beneficial for metabolism. It caused you to burn more fat and burn more sugar. But when you're exposed to that cortisol for extended periods of time, the opposite happens, which is the case for a lot of things. So cortisol erodes the muscle. It ruins the metabolism. And when you meet somebody who is stressed out of their mind for extended periods of time, the things that we notice most are going to be that it has low muscle tone and they have a tendency to have a big belly, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's one of the telltale signs. So what can we do about this? Well, dedicate your mind toward the mastery of chilling out is how you put it. Invest in yoga. Invest in some meditation. Do something for yourself every day that can help you manage that stress.
Lower that cortisol level. You know, relax. Just relax and chill out. Meditation is great. Leisure walking, we talked about. That is a great way to de-stress the body.
We're back to walking.
Exactly. Coping skills. Just learn coping skills. Learn how to chill out on command. You can do it. There are other tools out there. Some people might benefit from something like CBD oil, which is one thing we use in our practice here that's wonderful for helping the body to relax and does it in such a way that is natural and non-habit forming for people.
Okay.
But just dedicate the mind towards the mastery of chilling out. It's something, it's a skill that you have to develop. We're not great. We're not naturally great at relaxing because in nature, it would occur naturally. The stressors would be things like a lion jumping out. If you happen to get away from the lion, well, yeah, you'd go take a nap. But that isn't how things work right now. And in our society where it's a go, 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 you know, kind of environment, it's difficult and it's unnatural to want to chill out. In fact, when you chill out, it stresses you out because you think like, I should be doing something else. Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, oh no, I've been there. And I think that this is one that kind of flies under the radar a lot, is that people forget that that plays a role in weight loss.
Right, I agree.
Okay, number eight, and I'm not real excited that this is number 8 out of 10 because
this is the
probably
Blythe
like
command.
My number 2, yeah. But this is the Blythe command. Can anybody guess? Thou shalt drink water. Water is a miracle. And for most of us, it's free. And it just serves so many purposes. It's one of the easiest things in my mind that you can do to improve your mood, to improve your sleep, to improve your joint pain, to improve just everything, to improve the look of your skin.
Yep.
Just being hydrated is a huge, huge deal. And it's as simple as getting in enough water. And I get frustrated, and I need to put in place a coping mechanism for this, for people who are like, well, I just can't drink that much water. And I get it. Maybe you don't have to drink as much water as me, but drink more than what you're drinking right now and see how you feel, and then come back and talk to me.
Right. Start by just trying to get a liter of water in before noon. Try that.
Right.
Or half.
Cool. And that's something that you can totally control.
Right. Or half a liter. Just drink half a liter as soon as you wake up in the morning. It may be just as simple as starting with that. Just drink a half a liter when you wake up in the morning. If you're not getting any water throughout the day, that's going to make a difference. Ultimately, right. Super hydrating the body can be a miracle for your metabolism. And you and I have had many discussions about this of the client who was, they've been doing well, they've been losing some weight, but all of a sudden they hit a plateau. We get them just focusing on the water, and they start to lose weight again, or start to burn fat specifically again.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be a miracle for the metabolism. Do not ignore this one, because it's plain and simple.
Because it's simple, right? Yeah. Right. It should be like, I tell people, if you're on the hopscotch of life, that's square one. Just bump up your water intake. If you've completely fallen off the wagon and you don't know where to start, step into square one and start drinking more water. And a half a liter first thing upon waking is a fantastic recommendation, actually.
Cool.
Number 9, why don't you do this one?
Thou shalt build type 2 muscle fibers. This is one that, even though we haven't said it in this way, you and I have talked about resistance training a lot in the past. But let's kind of explain why it's so important to do intense and often heavy resistance training. Because a lot of women especially are resistant to this idea. They'd rather run on a treadmill for an hour. And even with, they might do a little bit of semi-high intensity interval training. You've seen this in the gym, have you, Blythe?
Hmm? Yeah,
of course. Semi-high intensity.
Yes. Yeah, what I find is that it's not that they don't want to do it. It's that they don't really know how. And incorporating a plan that is going to build type 2 muscle fibers through intense and heavy resistance training and interval training to turn your body into a gas-guzzling race car that burns fat like a teenager with credit cards would be burning their parents' money away.
Right.
To do that requires a plan and kind of learning something new. Going on a treadmill doesn't really require anything other than knowing where the green go button is.
Yeah.
And where the stop button is and how to up the incline or up the speed. It's very mindless. So there's a bit of mindfulness that comes with building type 2 muscle fibers, which is the key to refiring up your metabolism.
Right. And let's explain that. So there's two core types of muscle fibers. There's type 1 muscle fibers and there's type 2 muscle fibers. Of the type 2 muscle fibers, there's what's called type 2A and type 2B muscle fibers. And then we could say there is a mixed form. There is a type 2AB fiber that can be developed as well. I think we talked about that in an old podcast we did on the miracle workout.
Yes.
But here's the key point to take away from this. Type 1 muscle fibers are the muscle fibers that are responsible for endurance training. So when you're running a marathon, you're using almost exclusively type 1 muscle fibers. And if you look at a marathoner, those muscle fibers are generally very small and they lack tone. It's just the nature of the muscle itself. It's a very efficient muscle fiber, which is fantastic for survival. Terrible if you're trying to build a metabolism that fires aggressively and burns calories. So
right. Well, think about it this way for those that are listening. If they're great for conserving energy while you're out for the long haul, and I don't think most of us are trying to live there.
Right. We don't anymore. It used to serve us in a sense when we had to work all day long doing things that required a lot of type 1 muscle fibers. The problem is, In today's day and age, you don't require type 1 or type 2 muscle fibers. So what the body ends up doing is it number one, it erodes total muscle away, which is, you know, a process that's rampant in our society. But number two, it shifts the type of fiber. It changes the fiber towards more of a type 1 type nature, which means makes you a very efficient energy burner. So you burn fewer calories just by sitting around or doing activities. If we build more type 2 muscle fibers, and we can actually shift a muscle fiber from a type 1 towards a type 2 nature, and we could even take it to a type 2B fiber, which is the most aggressively burning fiber of them all. It is a muscle fiber that the body does not like to keep around unless it absolutely feels like it needs it. It is the muscle fiber that is designed to help us when there is a lot of danger in the environment, to be able to fight off lions, tigers, and bears. So right. It requires really intense and heavy resistance in order to activate and grow these types of really, you know, aggressively burning muscle fibers. And it requires consistent activity with those types of you know, resistance type activities in order to keep it around as well. The problem is a lot of women especially, but even a lot of men I'm seeing out there have a tendency to avoid resistance training, and specifically mm-hmm. intense and heavy resistance training. They may do some weight training, like for example, body pump, which really mm-hmm. builds more type 1 fibers than it does type 2 fibers. In general, right. I would say.
Yeah. It's more when you're doing endurance. 40 repetitions of right. a lighter weight, that is not high intensity interval training.
No, that's not going to build type 2 muscle fibers. The types right. of weights that will build type 2 fibers are going to be 6 to 8 repetitions, where it's so heavy that you can't do a 9th repetition.
Right. Sure. You're working to failure.
Right. Mm-hmm. Basically to failure. The more you work to that failure in that muscle, the more type 2B muscle fibers you will develop. And when that happens, your metabolism will improve. The women, especially when I meet women that are, let's say 50 plus years of age, who are in mm-hmm. physically great shape, they have a tendency to spend a lot of time focusing on resistance training more than any other form of exercise and activity. Would you find that to be the case?
Yes.
And they build muscle and they have good muscle tone. When you look around at most women and men, for that matter, that are over the age of 50, you start to see a lot of lack of muscle tone. And the more lack of tone you see, the more unhealthy the body has a tendency to be. So really what we're trying to say here is it's time, especially if your body doesn't seem to be responding to a lot of other measures and tactics and strategies, it's time to focus more of your attention on lifting more weights, rebuilding the muscle frame towards more of these type 2 muscle fibers that, by the way, you had when you were younger.
Right.
So that your metabolism works better.
And our bodies have a great memory. If that's something you used to do, finding that again is a lot easier for people than I think what they anticipate it to be. And a lot of people are surprised by that. People I've worked with, in fact, that are always surprised with themselves when they really get back into resistance training and pushing themselves. Our bodies are great adaptable like machines. And I think most of you out there would surprise yourself if you went out and just gave yourself a hell of a hard workout.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think you would surprise yourself.
And it'll suck at first, and it'll suck big time, and you'll hate it.
And you'll be sore. And you'll hate us. And I don't hate it. I love it, but maybe I'm sick like that.
You love it because you've adapted your body to it, you know, and you know okay. how it makes you feel ultimately. But people who haven't done that, you know, I see a lot of people who are naturally thin when they were younger, and then uh-huh. they had big problems when they were older, and right. they weren't used to really pushing themselves in the gym. And it's something you have to acclimate yourself to, right. you know? And so just be okay allowing it to suck. Don't push yourself 100% in the beginning. You know, allow yourself the opportunity to experience what a little bit of discomfort feels like before you get into a lot of discomfort. And by the right. way, building type 2 muscle is uncomfortable. It's always uncomfortable. Because that discomfort is what tells the muscles that if you don't get stronger, you are going to die. Like I say, it's an emergency message that says you got to be strong in order to survive. And that's what we're trying to send to the body. It can be a game changer for you if you take this one to heart.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And you can achieve type 2 muscle fiber activity through high intensity interval training, like doing treadmill work, or, you know, my personal favorite machine, Blythe. I think you'd be surprised to hear this because I haven't mentioned it, because I really just got one a couple months back. Is this isn't like a paid endorsement or anything. It's the Max Trainer.
Okay.
By the Max Trainer by Nordic, is it?
Is that the? Okay, I'm thinking Tread Climber.
Yeah, it's made by the same company that makes that, but it's the Max Trainer. It's a high intensity interval training machine. It's 14-minute workout, and
so it looks like an elliptical.
It looks like an elliptical, but a really cool looking elliptical. I got one myself at the house, and I absolutely love it. No piece of aerobic equipment has ever given me the high intensity interval workout that this machine has given. It's fantastic. So just a quick little pointer there.
I love hearing about different types of equipment that work well for people, because I'll give everyone out there a tip. And this is something I know from being in gyms my whole life. The pieces of equipment that are used the least, like the stair climber, or there's this lateral elliptical that I love to use. Nobody's ever on them. There's like 8 of them at the gym. There's 8 stair climbers at the gym. Nobody's ever on them. And that's because they're hard and they work. So if you want to go in there and try something new and you're not sure what to try, try the piece of equipment that nobody else is using.
It's a good point. That is a good point.
Yeah, it's true. I thought about that this morning, actually. commandment number 10, thou shalt get leverage on yourself. And this is something that whenever I'm working with a client, this is one of the main things that we work on, is remembering that it's going to take time. And weight loss is an ugly science.
That's eventually you're going to want to give up, is the bottom line.
Eventually you're going to want to give up. And we all feel that way. That's not just you. It's everybody out there. The key determinant of success is the ability to tolerate changing your behavior without seeing results. So you can't just go do, let's just say, the Max Trainer for 30 minutes today and expect to see results tomorrow. It doesn't work that way. You have to be okay with doing these things with consistency and seeing results later on. I feel like if I tell people, don't expect any results the first 2 weeks, then they'll get results the first 2 weeks. If I tell them just don't even focus on that. Don't even pay attention to that. Let's go 2 weeks. You know, let's just make these mini habits. Let's keep it consistent. So it's kind of like the 30-30, but we're going for 2 weeks. And then we'll measure and see how you feel. And I quite often find that it's crucial for people to understand that today's behavior doesn't necessarily mean that tomorrow is going to be different.
Right. And eventually you're going to be hanging on by a thread. Mm-hmm. Your motivation is going to be hanging on by a thread. Acknowledging that right now here is the best way to make sure you can push yourself through it when it comes. And, you know, I was reading a book by a habit expert, and he was a personal trainer, and he said, I tell my clients, don't expect results for 100 days.
Ooh, okay.
And
that's hefty.
that's bold. Because that is not something that's not a good way to sell clients, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Like right. Exactly.
Nobody wants to hear that. I don't want to hear it. It hurts me to even say it. But I also think it's very true. If we could get ourselves to accept that, and simultaneously teach ourselves to get leverage on ourselves, so that when we enter into that state of you know, I don't know what to call it, but where we feel like we are hanging on by a thread, our motivation that we just want to give up and just start over with something else, something brand new, something mm-hmm. exciting. If we just hang on and say 100 days, let's see what happens in 100 days. I think a lot of people would be more successful.
Right. You know, I can see how a trainer would say that, especially if you're seeing somebody two or maybe three times a week, because you become a source of energy and motivation. People look forward to, or maybe completely dread. I don't know. It depends on your personality. But you're touching base with that person two or three times a week, or maybe it's even once a week, and then you've been, you know, prescribed other things to do other days of the week. But I think working with a trainer 100 days might, I shouldn't say pass a little faster, but it might be a little easier with a trainer by your side.
The trainer is the leverage.
Yes, exactly.
You know, the trainer is the leverage.
Exactly.
And
I like to, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I like to tell my clients that just when you feel like giving up, just when you are at that day where you are just like, you know what, this is it. I hate this. I hate everything. That is the moment. That is the pivotal moment that your body is about to change. And that is your final fight. That's like our final bit of resistance, just letting go. And I try to remind people that that is going to come. And when it does, and you recognize it, let it go. Because that's usually what, being in bodybuilding for so many years, every time I was like, you know what, I hate this, I'm cranky, I haven't had enough, you know, fruits and vegetables, or, you know, I just haven't, all I've had was fruits and vegetables, and I just really feel like I just wanted a Rice Krispie treat or something. That's usually the moment that things started to change for me. Like the next day, I would notice a humongous difference in myself. So don't create your own resistance.
All right, we call that the Valley of Despair, right?
Yes,
and we have in the Cut the Fat Coaching Club, we have a whole lesson devoted to the you know, this pathway that people take when they decide to make a change, and the bottom peak, the trough of that graph is what we call the Valley of Despair, and the only solution, the only way to survive the Valley of Despair, there's only one way to survive it, and that is just to keep on taking action.
And if nothing lasts forever,
you keep on taking action,
and it will pass.
It will begin that ascent into the point where you will have just magical results. But it always happens that if you don't get through the valley of despair that we all go through, there is no success for you. It will happen. You will feel that valley of despair. It is uncomfortable. It sucks. But if you keep on taking action, you'll have some pretty magical results on the other end of that. You know, we in the Cut the Fat Coaching Club, we have this new habit tracking system where you and I can kind of manage things. What I noticed was that when we activated that feature in the back end where you and I would be able to monitor and keep an eye on the types of results that people were getting with their habits, you know, they're checking them off every day, and we can see that.
Yeah.
People's weight started to drop again. You know,
the
number started to go down again. And
yeah.
And that's because now they have leverage. They know that an angry troll is on the other side of that.
Named Blythe.
Should they? And you know, the people that are taking advantage and utilizing that new habit tracking system, they're doing much better than the folks who are not yet. And my hope is that everybody in there will really take advantage of that system, because it's very, very helpful. But whatever it is, find leverage. It could be hiring a trainer. It could be making a public proclamation on Facebook. It could be setting up a monetary consequence. You know, I've heard of some people who set up and I think there's some online website that does this, where you set you either do something or the online system will make a deposit to a charity that you hate. Like if you're a Democrat, for example, it could be to Trump's reelection plan program.
Oh,
you know,
my gosh.
Or something like that. You know, so it's an interesting way of getting some leverage on yourself. Just keep in mind that when you have leverage on yourself, it will scare you a little bit, right? If you have a personal trainer, or you have to face down a personal trainer every week, it scares you a little bit.
Right. Well, here's to rock solid follow through.
Amen to that. That's it.
So it for the Ten Commandments. I thought that was actually a really fun podcast. I am over here talking with my hands and getting all crazy. I love this stuff. So I hope you guys keep listening. Make sure you find us on Facebook, Cut the Fat Podcast. You can go on iTunes and rate us. I know lately we've been getting a lot of 5-star ratings, actually. Awesome. I love going in and reading those. And if you're interested in becoming a part of the Cut the Fat Coaching Club, once it reopens, just shoot us an email.
Awesome. Great.
Okay, guys.
We'll see you next time here on Cut the Fat Podcast.
Bye now.